In the license condition, then the licensee will have to submit an application to the agency for our approval to take that different approach, if you will. As I indicated under Appendix R, under this one-size-fits-all kind of approach, the resources needed to address the prescriptive requirements are focused primarily on meeting those prescriptive requirements. And in other words, there's no distinction made between one fire area and another fire area in terms of any risk significance or hazards, if you will. Under NFPA 805, as I've indicated, the licensees have the ability to look at those high-risk areas and focus their resources into those areas. I'll give you an example. There are areas in these nuclear power plants that have very minimal or no combustible loadings. A tank room might be an example, something of that nature, where there might be two trains of equipment located in that same fire area. There might be instrumentation cables or control cables. One set of cables might run on one side of the room, one set of cables might run on the other side of the room. Under Appendix R, that licensee would have to separate those under the three options that I mentioned. Under NFPA 805, the licensees can take a hard look and determine whether or not they should spend resources separating those two sets of equipment and make a determination whether or not they need to make that modification. There are other areas in the plan, on the other hand, where the risk is demonstrated to be fairly high and licensees are implementing modifications as a result of the identification of those higher risk areas. And I'll give you a few examples in some later slides. And in both cases, whether it's an Appendix R approach or whether it's under a risk-informed, performance-based approach, licensees are required to maintain defense in depth. As you recall, I mentioned the three echelons of defense in depth. So despite the fact that one approach might be taken versus another, licensees are still required to demonstrate that they can meet defense in depth. So what's happening in South Carolina in terms of nuclear power plants? So what I've done is I've listed the four sites in South Carolina that have nuclear power plants in place. In terms of Oconee, Units 1, 2, and 3, they successfully transitioned to NFPA 805, received their license amendment back in 2010. The VC Summer Plant submitted their license amendment request to the agency back in 2012 to transition to NFPA 805, and the agency is currently undergoing a detailed review of their application to transition to NFPA 805. Catawba, Unit 1 and 2, is also transitioning to NFPA 805. They recently submitted their license amendment request, and the staff is performing their review on that. And the same for Robinson. So all the operating units in the state of South Carolina are transitioning to NFPA 805 under that new rule that I recently described. Now, they choose to transition for various reasons. Some licensees do it because they see a benefit in terms of economics. As I indicated, there might be a better, smarter way of doing things rather than the prescriptive approach that's required under Appendix R. Other licensees see it as an opportunity to obtain self-approval. I indicated a few minutes ago that licensees in their license condition have criteria that they need to meet in order to demonstrate that they can self-approve certain changes in their plant in terms of fire protection. And it also provides licensees who are currently having issues with Appendix R compliance to bring themselves back into compliance under a new regulation, under this alternative rule, NFPA 805. In terms of at a national level, approximately half the fleet of the operating reactors are transitioning to NFPA 805. I mentioned that I would talk a little bit about some of the modifications that licensees have identified and are implementing as part of their transition to NFPA 805. Because licensees do a very detailed, comprehensive reanalysis as required under NFPA 805 of their fire protection program, they're identifying areas in the plant that could take advantage of additional risk reduction modifications. And I've listed some of those here. At the Oconee plant, they're putting in place something called a protected service water system. It's a system that will provide additional alternative power to various pieces of equipment in the plant. It also has advantage not only in fire protection to reduce the risk, but it also has advantages in other external events, and by that I mean events such as tornadoes, flood, things like that that are outside of fire protection. At VC Summer, they're putting in something called an alternate seal injection system. Again, it has advantages not just in fire protection, but in other areas. At Catawba, the licensee is proposing to reroute or relocate cables in the plant to provide that separation that they feel is necessary in order to demonstrate compliance under NFPA 805. At the Robinson plant, the Robinson plant is proposing to modify some of the fire protection systems by installing additional detection systems, and in some cases fairly sophisticated and highly sensitive detection systems. And they're also proposing to modify and provide additional automatic fire suppression systems at these plants. So it's the main message that I'm trying to send is licensees who are transitioning to NFPA 805, it's not merely a paper exercise for them. We believe that licensees, because they're taking a good, hard look at their fire protection program, are identifying needed modifications in their plant and conducting the analysis in a way and identifying those modifications needed and implementing those modifications. So they are modifying their plants. It's not just in South Carolina. We're seeing this with all of the other licensees who are transitioning to NFPA 805 as well, to one degree or another. So in summary, what I'd like to say is that, as I indicated, the agency requires a robust fire protection program at every nuclear power plant in the United States. Licensees have the option of either staying within the deterministic or prescriptive requirements under Appendix R or their current licensing basis, or they can transition to NFPA 805 or the risk-informed performance-based. Either path provides adequate safety and protection in the event of a fire. As I've indicated, some of the enhancements made by licensees as their modifications to the plants helps to mitigate other external events as well. So there are advantages in both. That's my summary slide. What I'd like to do, just if I could, just take a minute or two. I've added slides at the end here to provide the council with additional information that can be obtained through the links that I've provided there. Let me highlight this one right here. This provides, if you click on that link, it'll provide the council with additional information that's publicly available in terms of fire protection at these operating nuclear power plants. We're in the process of updating that website. We've been undergoing this effort over the last 6 to 8 months. So what you see on there is somewhat outdated. We're trying to provide information that's more amenable to the understanding of the public, to fire protection programs in the United States. So what you'll see there and then changes over the next couple of months is an improvement to this. I mentioned the different rules, so if you want to see the exact wording, there are links there to those documents. For this slide here, what I wanted to point out to you is this it's called a regulatory guide. A regulatory guide is something that the NRC publishes that provides guidance to licensees as one way to meet a rule that we've issued. Because a rule only has so many words. And so there's additional guidance because the devil's in the details. So this provides licensees with guidance on how to implement and demonstrate compliance to a regulation. More specifically, what I wanted to point out to the council is if you want a good history or background on fire protection, the first couple chapters in this reg guide provides a detailed description and discussion of fire protection at nuclear power plants. So everything that I said beforehand, or I shouldn't say everything, most of what I said beforehand, you'll find that in the first couple chapters in that regulatory guide. This one right here, the last one, I mentioned Browns Ferry. Browns Ferry is an important, and I opened up my discussion by giving you a date, that March 22nd, 1975 date. The agency also felt that there were important lessons to be learned from the Browns Ferry fire, even though it's been nearly 40 years ago. It's still important to remember. We want to make sure that folks understand what occurred back then and continue to understand what those lessons are. So this was recently updated by the staff. So that new reg, BR-0361, has been superseded by a new reg, if you will. And I gave Jennifer hard copies for the council's use and information for the Browns Ferry fire. Okay. I also provided the council with additional references in terms of what a performance-based, risk-informed fire protection program might consist of. And again, some of the information that I talked about is in this regulatory guide, is available there. And the last one I wanted to mention to you is that the Government Accountability Office looked at the fire protection program at the NRC, and they were tasked with doing an assessment of some long-standing issues with the NRC in terms of what we're doing to close out issues, and so that's their report. And I think that also provides the council with additional information, and that's publicly available on their website, in terms of the progress being made to close out some of these long-standing fire protection issues. At a high level, what I can tell you is that the Government Accountability Office did conclude that we're making progress. I know that there are some NGOs out there, some non-governmental organizations, critical of the progress made by the agency in fire safety. But I think that we've made great progress in addressing a lot of the fire safety issues at these power plants. We continue to make progress. We received no recommendations from this GAO report, which in and of itself I think is indicative of the progress and the efforts being made by the agency in fire safety. That concludes my conclusion, my presentation, and I'll open it up to any questions, Karen.
Thank you very much, Alex. And before we start with the questions from the council, I just want to remind the public that Alex's presentation will be up on the Governor's Council website, which you can get to through the Energy Office website, and so all these links will be available to y'all. So with
Karen, can I just thank you for adding that in there. There's a number down at the bottom left-hand corner of the title page of my presentation. And what that means is it's a number that if you go into what's called our ADAMS system, our ADAMS is our document system that's available to the public. But if you go on our NRC website, that link that I showed you, and there's a description actually on that for documents available on the NRC website, that very top. So if you enter that ML number that's in the lower left-hand corner, the public can then access this presentation.
Great. Thank you very much.
It should be available in the near future, if not today.
Thanks. Questions?
Do the new units require, can they use either system, or is it specified they have to use the risk protection type system?
That's a very good question, Captain. The new reactors, for example, VC Summer, the new units that are being built there, they're being designed and built under enhanced guidance that was issued by the Commission back in the 1990 timeframe for the advanced light water reactor designs, because we understood the lessons learned under Appendix R. Because these were not designed yet at the time, they weren't built yet at the time, they can install the separation that I mentioned to you today, as opposed to trying to backfit it, as I indicated in the past. So the new reactor designs are under what we call enhanced fire protection guidance, and it's documented in a document with the agency, and I can give you that reference if needed. Licensees under NFPA 805, NFPA 805 applies only to the existing operating reactors, so it doesn't apply to new reactors. Does that answer your question?
It does. One other quick question. You mentioned that you, as the fire departments and things like that, you do a lot of looking at how they operate and how they do their drills and those kinds of things. Obviously, you only have 15 people. I don't think you can go to all the sites and do that. So do you use the residents for that?
Yes, sir. I'm glad you asked that clarification question.
They're qualified to do that. That's what I mean.
The office that I work in does not perform inspections. We provide the technical expertise and support to our regional offices. The agency has four regional offices scattered throughout the United States, Atlanta being the one that covers South Carolina. In that office, we have qualified inspectors that look at the fire protection programs. They do it on a triennial basis. So every 3 years, they do an in-depth look into the fire protection program at these power plants. They do it with qualified inspectors, fire protection engineers, electrical type systems, and so forth, whatever is needed to perform that inspection. And the inspection results are available on our public website. The residents that you mentioned, because we have two resident inspectors at each of our sites, also perform inspections. They do quarterly inspections, and what they do during the quarterly inspections of fire protection is they look at the condition of the plant. What's the material condition of the plant? Are there any issues with fire protection systems, things like that? And on an annual basis, we'll observe a fire drill that the licensee conducts. So we have qualified folks both at headquarters, we don't do the inspections, in the regions, and at the sites to conduct these inspections and to verify compliance with the fire safety regulations.
Thank you.
When I think of fire dynamic tools, I think of New Reg 1824. Was that your group that came up with that, or the fire dynamic tools?
Yes. Our group, in conjunction with our Office of Research, developed the information and the guidance that's in fire dynamic tools. There are other sophisticated, more sophisticated fire modeling tools available also. That's just one of several that's available to licensees. Licensees also have available fire modeling from NIST as well.
That was my next question.
Yes.
What is the interaction? Is there a specific interaction you maintain with NIST? I think of FDS and other fire dynamic models.
Yes. Our Office of Research works very closely with NIST in the development and the application of those tools. We keep them advised on the challenges or some of the issues that come up through our Office of Research. If a need arises for them to develop the tools further, then we'll make arrangements to do that with them. I can't offhand recall, because I'm not in the Office of Research, whether or not are any activities associated with FDS, for example. But I have on my staff fire modeling experts who understand very well the application of these different fire modeling tools that licensees are using in their transition to NFPA 805. And we also have consultants in place who provide additional support to the staff to review the application by licensees for fire modeling. So, there are a number of tools available out there that licensees can use.
Yeah, I want to compliment you on 1824. I think that really very well put together. But the other issue is for new licensure. Is there a requirement on fire modeling or anything particular that people might have to use?
Not in new reactors. New reactors are not required to. In fact, NFPA, like I indicated, NFPA 805 doesn't apply to new reactors. That does not, however, mean that new reactors cannot use fire modeling. If a licensee wants to use fire modeling as a tool, if you will, to demonstrate some sort of compliance feature, licensees are certainly free to do that, as they are even under the deterministic rule. Licensees can apply in a very case-specific basis the application of fire modeling to us. We discourage that in a way because it's a cherry-picking approach as opposed to licensees taking the wholesale approach to transition to NFPA 805. That way they get a more holistic view of the power plant in lieu of taking specific looks at an area in a plant and using fire modeling, but they're free to do that. And then submit that to us, and then we will make our assessment and conclusion accordingly.
Thank you.
Alex.
Yes, sir.
With all the older reactors and neither two of them being built the same, what problems has that created when it comes to fire protection, and what have we done to overcome that?
Well, I think one of the major issues, Mr. Wells, is with respect to the licensing basis of these power plants. Each power plant is somewhat unique in their design. So what we have is, because as I indicated at the beginning of my talk, the Appendix R was backfit to the power plants. Now, power plants start to do different things in terms of demonstrating compliance to Appendix R. I mentioned the exemptions. So fully understanding what the licensing basis is of these power plants that are not transitioning to NFPA 805 is a challenge. And what have we done about it? One of the things we have done is to create a database for the exemptions. That was at the behest of a 2008 GAO report that came out. So we've made, I believe, improvements there. Our field inspectors out of the regions and our resident inspectors can access that database and better understand what the licensing basis is of those plants. We've had other challenges in terms of ensuring that licensees understand what the prescriptive requirements are. I mentioned long-standing fire protection issues. I believe the agency has closed out these long-standing fire protection issues to a great degree. There are still some out there. I, You know, I wouldn't say that we've completely closed all of them out, but we've made great strides. We've closed out issues associated with operator manual actions. I believe that we've come to closure on the fire wrap material or fire barrier material, and we're fast approaching, if we haven't already, something what's called multiple spurious operation issues. So we've made great strides, I think, and that's those are the challenges with these unique designs because they're all just a little bit different.
With the new reactors that are being built, are they more consistent now? Are they still, do they still have a lot of variation?
I'm going to have to preface my comment because I'm not in the office of new reactors. So I'm more familiar with the operating reactors, but what I can tell you is that in terms of the consistency of the new reactors, not so much in the system design, but more in terms of the fire safety guidance and the application of that guidance. Because I indicated there was guidance that was issued by the agency back in the 1990 timeframe, it's very clear to them what needs to be done in terms of demonstrating that they can safely shut down the plant in the event of a fire. And the application of that, I believe, is more consistent today than it could have been done under the old operating reactor designs because it was a backfit. So licensees, because there were unique designs under the old reactor designs that were difficult for them to demonstrate complete compliance under the prescriptive requirements. So in terms of consistency, I would term it consistency in terms of the application of the guidance.
Thank you, Alex. I have a question, but first I just want to say thank you very much. You answered most of my questions. It's a very thorough presentation, and I really appreciate it. My only question is, at some point you said, I wrote down, by transitioning to the 805 rule, it gives reactors an opportunity to bring themselves into compliance under the new rule. Does that mean that there are no exceptions under 805 and this gets plants that had exceptions out of that exception? What does that mean?
What that means is the licensees who are transitioning to NFPA 805 might have configurations out there that today do not currently meet Appendix R requirements. They've identified those. They've put in place compensatory measures. So while they transition to NFPA 805, they've got the compensatory measures in place. That addresses the safety aspects of it. Mm-hmm. Now, how do they address the technical or the regulatory or aspects of it, if you will? Licensees who have identified exceptions, if you will, to the deterministic requirements can demonstrate adequacy of that through this risk-informed, performance-based approach. I used the example of a tank room some time ago. Under Appendix R, that licensee would be required under prescriptive requirements to meet one of the three options. Under NFPA 805, that licensee will have some flexibility in terms of how can they demonstrate that they can still safely shut down the plant. Maybe they enhance that first echelon of defense in depth where they strictly limit the combustibles in that room so you can't have a fire that would result in the loss of both trains of equipment.
Thank you.
And use fire modeling and things like that.
Alex,
I'd like to thank you for a very informative and timely presentation. I have a question about either of these procedures, either the prescriptive or the risk assessment procedures. Is there a time period built in over which these firefighting procedures are required to be operational? In other words, you know, something as critical as a spent fuel pool, if there's a fire there, is there a requirement you have to be able to fight it for 48 hours or 2 weeks or 2 months or until it's out?
Well, at a high level, in terms of demonstrating compliance to the regulations, whether it's deterministic or under NFPA 805, the licensees have to demonstrate through analysis and through calculations, what have you, that despite that fire, they can still safely shut down the plant. Now, in terms of a timeline, if a licensee, if a fire occurs in a fire area and that fire extends beyond whatever analyzed time frame that that licensee has, that licensee then has to implement additional measures, whether it be a modification to the plant or procedures or what have you, in order to bring that timeline back within a time frame so that they don't reach that point where they cannot safely shut down that plant. You know what I'm saying? So
that's the criterion. And does this include loss of off-site power, for example?
Well, under loss of off-site power, under Appendix R, loss of off-site power needs to be assumed under certain conditions. Under NFPA 805, because now we're not strictly dictating to licensees under prescriptive requirements that you shall assume a loss of off-site power, if that fire results in a loss of off-site power under NFPA 805, then that licensee would need to address it. If that licensee can demonstrate to us through fire modeling, through their risk assessment or what have you, that they will not lose off-site power, then we would assess that and make a determination as to whether or not we agree with that analysis.
Thank you.
Anything else? Thank you, Alex, very much. Okay, segueing from fires to heat. Is anybody besides me think it's way too hot in here?
Yes. Yes.
Could we do something about that?
I doubt it.
You mean with a shoe? Okay, so our next presenters are, and I will let Mike and Susan decide how they want to do this, but the Barnwell Lolo Waste Disposal Facility Annual Update, Mike Benjamin, who's the general manager, and then we'll make their presentation, and then Susan Jenkins, who is the DHEC regulator, will make DHEC's presentation. She might want you to go first.